Okay, forget boxwoods, hostas, azaleas, all of those other boring landscape plants that we see in every single front yard. Start thinking about herbs. What if your landscape could not just look pretty, but it could feed you? It could scent the air. It could attract pollinators and look stunning year-round. That you could be harvesting beautiful herbs from the plants right outside your door. I was fascinated when I heard about a talk that Sue Goetz was giving about landscape herbs, and I wanted to have her on to discuss it. She's a garden designer and an author who reimagines herbs as full-on landscape plants, not just windowsill or container staples. So in this conversation, you're going to learn how to use herbs as hedges, ground covers, and pollinator magnets, and learn why these generous plants might be the most underrated stars of your landscape yet.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hi, Sue. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I'm so excited to chat with you about a unique concept. I feel like when I think about herbs, I think about little containers, maybe a raised bed filled with lots and lots of herbs, but I don't think of herbs as a landscape plant.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to pick your brain about this today. You're such a seasoned gardener. You've published multiple books. How did you become the plant lady you are today?
You know, I kind of wonder if I didn't become, but always was. I was that kid who, you know, stabbed toothpicks in the avocado pit and made a tree. And,
okay.
You know, and my mom did not garden. So my room had all the house plants. And that's kind of my gateway into this. And it just evolved later in life, you know, lived on a farm, got down and dirty, figured it all out. And then, you know, wanted to start sharing with people. That's kind of really how it happened.
That's really interesting because I feel like most kids, if their parents are gardeners, then they'll take on their parents' gardening abilities. But the fact that you had to go out of your way to become a plant person is very interesting. So your mom just supported your houseplants, your passion from a young age?
Yeah, she, you know, for presents or whatever, I'd get a house plant, but she knew she didn't have to take care of it. But, you know, wow. I will say my grandma was an amazing gardener. So I feel like at that point, you know, it's like, you never know what generation you're going to skip and still get, you know, plant the seeds. Cause my grandma was amazing. And I remember visiting when I was little, not later in life, and just being mesmerized. You could eat lettuce right out of the garden. You just shake off the dirt. That was amazing, you know? So you never know. I just think you never know who's going to like catch on to that.
Yeah. My sister lives down, you know, 8 minutes from me, and she has two little girls. And for her first pregnancy, for her baby shower, I planted her a garden. I did four raised beds that I planted for her. And it was something that she really wanted to do and never got to do before she got pregnant. And, you know, that was my gift to her. And it's so sweet now. Her daughter is almost two, and her daughter will go out to the garden and pick a pepper off of the garden plant and just start eating it. Like she'll pick the tomatoes. It's like her favorite place to be. And I had bought these like cute little garden accents that was like a little dragonfly where the wings move, you know, like those little cute little garden decors.
Yeah.
They're like her favorite toys. Whenever she goes outside, she like takes them out of the garden boxes and like walks around with them.
Aww.
And it's so sweet. But yeah, like it's so interesting to see, you know, youth so interested in. She's a toddler. She's not even youth, I feel like.
Yeah.
So interested in plants and have it be so natural for them.
Well, yeah. And I think it's kind of, it's a bit of magic, right? To be outside and to discover. And I think it's, you know, hopefully it's never going to be a lost art to have our kids just know they can go eat off of a plant and be okay. You know, eat a raspberry, whatever comes off. I love it. I love it. That's how I have grandchildren who they're encouraged to be out there and, you know, it's their favorite place too. So let's keep doing that.
That's beautiful. So you have a book and you give talks on herbs a lot. Like what attracted you to herbs more than other plants?
You know, I feel like it really comes down to the generous giving that herbs are. They give us flavor. They give us, you know, fragrance. They give us medicine. I don't think there's another plant category that we could think of besides herbs that give so generously. And I think that's my attraction. It's like, what can you do for me? You know, that's kind of how I ask my plants. And I'm like, I can season my sauce with whatever that looks like. And I think that's the attraction for a lot of people because it's a purposeful, useful plant. You know, you can use it in many ways. And that was my main attraction. I couldn't get enough of discovering about herbs.
Yeah, that was my first entry into gardening. I lived in New York City in 500 square feet and we had a 9-square-foot balcony garden. So we couldn't grow much with 9 square feet, but I grew chives and basil. And every morning my husband and I would clip chives from our balcony and put them in our eggs.
Yeah.
And just that small connection to our food source when you're living in New York City and you're used to buying chives in plastic boxes, like it really started such a journey for us into growing our own food. And also, I mean, my audience will roll their eyes when they hear me mentioning this because I always talk about this, but I really feel like scent is like the most underutilized sense in our garden. And herbs offer like the most wide variety of scents that you could really experience in the garden.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's so much research now around aromatherapy and rosemary and basil and, you know, all these different plants. Are you into herbalism as well? I know you do some beauty stuff.
Yeah. So I would say for herbs, I'm just one that just wants to discover a little bit of everything. I do tend to stay away from, you know, herbalism, medicinal, that kind of thing. I want to know that that's what that plant is good for. But I don't teach a lot on that. I really kind of want to share more the gardening and the discovery, the flavor, and a little bit on healing, you know, like having a calendula salve, super easy. I don't know. Am I a lazy gardener? Where I just want it to be easy. I don't want to have to be in the basement with boiling beakers and eye of newt and, you know, I want
tinctures.
Exactly. I want it to be simple, but I do think it's important. You know, if you want to dive deep into an herb, is kind of know what its history is, maybe some of that, but you don't necessarily have to do it or, but to understand it kind of, I think, opens a door on what they really are and how vast, just what they do, you know, the generosity of what they do. I think that's super cool.
Yeah. Herbalism books are great to like have on your bookshelf because in the morning when you're having your coffee, like you can read. No, they're all broken up by herbs. They're like dictionaries of herbs. And so each herb has one or two pages. You could just flip to any page and just learn about one herb and like its medicinal properties and then like move on with your life. But it is an easy way to kind of just like learn. They're fun facts. They're like fun party facts too.
Yeah. Good trivia, right?
Did you know trivia?
One of the things I discovered in researching for one of my books that boxwood, I'm like, why is that an herb? I guess in history, it was used like as a hair rinse for like a Rogaine of its day or something like that. So, I mean, what do you know, right? It's like, this is, you know, how many plant categories can you dive deep and go, really? That did that?
Right.
Or it was used for that? I think that's what makes it adventurous. I think that's the fun part.
Totally. So, like I kind of said in the beginning, you know, when I think of herbs, I'm thinking of little pots, maybe an intensively planted larger pot, but I'm not thinking landscape. I'm not thinking hedges. I'm not thinking, you know, big statement plants. So why do they make good? Like, how do we have to reimagine herbs to think about using them from a landscape sense?
You know, I think, you know, part of, you know, we were just talking about the discovery. And so when I started diving deep into herbs, I think we're so used to having prim and proper little herb gardens or on our windowsill. And I thought, why can't they be used as a wider, you know, wider choices. So when you start exploring deep, you'll start to see trees and shrubs in the mix, elderberry, mm-hmm. you know, ginkgo, all of these, and those are landscape plants. And so that's what kind of started, you know, discovering all the aspects that you could use. And really, if we go back to the common ones that maybe everybody really is familiar with, like a lavender plant, to me, mm-hmm. a hedge along a walkway that you can run your hands on when you're walking up when it's in bloom, magic. And it makes a beautiful hedge. So I think it's really, you know, and some history, the European gardens, a lot of them had thyme hedges and hyssop hedges and centolina, you know, maybe less familiar, but still purposeful. And so when you're starting to talk about them in a landscape, I mean, they just check a lot of boxes, easy to take care of, low water use, which is a big buzz thing in our gardens right now. We need to watch how we use water. And you know, other things, deer resistant, many of those things just kind of start checking some boxes. Why can't they be landscape plants?
Yeah. What herbs lend to larger, like if we want to replace a hedge or if we want to replace like larger, you know, plants on our property, what are the herbs that we should be looking at? You mentioned some trees.
Yeah, like ginkgo trees. There's vitex, which is a beautiful large shrub, big blue flowers on it. Elderberries, we're probably all familiar with knowing what elderberry is, whether we know we grow it or not. You can. It makes a fabulous large shrub. There's Pacific wax myrtle, the berries, the bayberry. That's bay laurel. You're probably familiar with bay leaf, like you put in your stew. Mm-hmm. That makes a great evergreen hedge. If it's hardy in your area, man, that's a really robust evergreen hedge. That's what you want, so you don't have to see through it all the time. So when you start kind of diving deep in ginkgo trees, that's another one where it's kind of being studied a lot for its memory use, things like that. And it makes a beautiful tree and, you know, an alley of trees, so focal point in a garden. So when you start kind of tagging onto some of those things and going, that's an herb? Okay. Let's try and see how that would look in a landscape. And I think some of the familiar things that people, you know, mostly familiar, I still think like I love a hedge of purple leaf basil along a cut flower border. I mean, why not? Mm. Or curly parsley. I put that on the edges of a flower border because those are come and go plants. And so, you know, so's the rest of the maybe cut flowers that you're growing, some annuals or whatever. So they make nice little tidy little edges along.
Mm-hmm. And they make great foliage for a little bouquet yeah. as well that's going to add scent. What about, you know, I'll never forget in California once I was at a spa and from the walkway from the pool to the spa, they had this slope, like a set of stairs that had a slope. They had planted the entire slope with rosemary and it was really large rosemary plants. So how do you get those big rosemary plants?
That's a great question. You know, man, rosemary, I'm so glad you brought it up. It's magic. I have a hedge of rosemary in my garden.
Yeah.
And there's a couple different rosemaries. So it's kind of a selection of variety choice. There's like a creeping rosemary that'll creep over the side, especially down in, you know, warmer areas. It'll creep down the sidewalks. It'll go over the walls. And then there's the upright rosemaries. I have an upright one called Tuscan Blue. And right now it's in full flower. I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so it's a little milder. And I have to say the bloom, sky blue. And I go out there and the hummingbirds are diving bombing. They love it. And, you know, so it's really kind of a variety choice. So you can get a hedge because my hedge is probably 5 feet tall. It's really long because I've got lots of it planted. So, you know, pick the right varieties. And that comes down to landscaping too. There's some herbs that I wouldn't pick in a landscape. And then there's some varieties that are pretty magical, like an upright rosemary.
Yeah. You could have the upright rosemary as a hedge, or I would assume you could do the creeping rosemary as a ground cover.
As a ground cover, you know, where I have mine, I don't use it as a ground cover as much, but I have it dripping out of the sides of pottery because it is gorgeous. You know, it hangs over, it stays nice and woody. And right now, again, blooming. I have one in a cobalt blue pot. So those blue flowers against it. So, you know, there's different kind of alternatives you can do and still have a rosemary. If you're in an area where it's a little colder, the climate maybe isn't supportive of, you know, there's an rosemary called ARP, A-R-P. It's an upright one and it's pretty tough. It would take a little bit cooler climate. So, you know, it's always worth a try to me. I mean, why not experiment, right?
So you can overwinter it. Yeah. It's can go totally dormant under snow and then it'll come back in the spring?
So I would say on rosemary in particular, it in areas where you're kind of, I'm going to say if you're USDA zone 4 and lower, mm-hmm. maybe 5, it's a little tough. That wouldn't be a plant that would overwinter well, but you get warmer, mm-hmm. you know, where I'm in the Pacific Coast again. So a little warmer. It overwinters. It's an evergreen plant. It's pretty fabulous. So you just kind of have to watch your climate. And we do that when we garden outside anyway. We kind of have to know what we're going against.
Thank you to Espoma Organic for supporting today's episode. If you are landscaping, you should be doing it with Espoma Organic. They are a almost 100-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to creating products for people, pets, and the planet that are safe, organic, and really freaking good. They make your plants grow so epically. And if you're landscaping, you're going to need garden soil, you're going to need compost, you're going to need fertilizer, and you can do that all with Espoma Organic. They have incredible garden soil. They have a line of fertilizers called their Tones. So you can use their garden tone, their bulb tone, their flower tone, their tomato tone, whatever you're growing, they have a fertilizer for it. They have two different amazing composts that I've been using for many, many years now. And also they have great potting mixes and fertilizers for your indoor houseplants as well. So learn more about their incredible line of indoor and outdoor products at Espoma.com. There's also a store locator on the website that shows you where Espoma is carried near you. Or you can go to the show notes and click the link to my Amazon storefront where I've curated all of my Espoma favorites for you. Thank you again to Espoma for being such an amazing long-term partner of this podcast. Yeah, there's so many herbs that are like so tender.
Yeah, that, really temperamental. You know, yeah,
you have to be conscientious of them. So what about deer resistance? I know there are deer, the bane of the gardener's existence, and everybody always wants that, what's deer resistant? What won't my deer eat? And because there are so many herbs that have such scent, a lot of them end up being deer resistant and people don't realize that. So if you live in a place with a lot of deer pressure, what are some great deer resistant herbs that you could consider swapping? And also, like, I'm not a landscaper, I'm a renter, so I've never landscaped before. So I don't even know the words, but like, what would be a hedge plant versus a ground cover versus a, like, all the different types of landscaping plants? Like, what would you suggest for deer resistance?
Yeah, you know, you hit it right on. It's those aromatic oils, the stuff we love about herbs, mm-hmm. the pollinators love about the herbs, the fragrance, the aroma. The deer hate it, or most of them really don't. And I have high deer pressure in my garden. And so I feel like I'm a really great experimental ground for this. Mm-hmm. And I have hedges of lavender. I have sage as a hedge, a common garden sage, beautiful hedge when it blooms, especially catmint, you know, kind of, I puddle that underneath roses and things like that, because the deer usually don't, you have to kind of say usually don't go through a plant like a catmint to eat the roses. So I call them my protectors. They protect my plants.
Okay. And it's like an invisible fence almost.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. If they can't crane their necks far enough over it, they won't go through it. And that's so anything with rosemary, anything with a really high aromatic quality, they pretty much stay away. Santalina is one I have in my garden. It's not well known, but it's a beautiful plant and they hate it. They just, you know.
Santalina, that's an herb or that's a variety of
it's
an herb?
It's an herb, Santalina. It's a, you know, mine is actually called Lemon Fizz and it's like chartreuse yellow. It is very aromatic. It's kind of a high drought tolerant plant too. It doesn't like a lot of water. It likes to be in the sun. It's a classic hedge in Europe. So if you're looking for something that, you know, I'm just trying to think of, you know, it's a great hedge for one thing, but I have it tucked into just in mixed plantings. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, it's that discovery, what goes beyond parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme, right?
Now, you mentioned curly parsley as like something you're going to plant as a border. I think a lot of people might be asking, okay, what herbs can I put on the border of a bed or on the border of a container to kind of act as that invisible fence? So what are more smaller plants that you could put out there?
You know, upright thyme is one of them because there's creeping thyme. That's a ground cover, right? You kind of call that the carpet on the ground between the stepping stones. you know, creeping thyme, woolly thyme, some of those. And then there's the upright thyme. So English thyme, lemon thyme, French thyme. They make nice little kind of blousy, you know, hedges along a walkway. Again, I keep going back to some of these, and I'm going back to them because I think they're popular. It's like lavender, rosemary. And then I'm looking at, sometimes I'm starting to look at even flowering annuals, like nasturtium. We think of that. That's a wonderful little annual, but it's edible. The leaves are edible. The flowers are edible. So that makes it an herb because it's a purposeful
variegated plant. Nasturtium too. Yeah. Like I grew that a couple years ago. Gorgeous. Yeah. The leaves are gorgeous. And then the flowers are gorgeous.
Perfect. So just run a hedge of them. I mean, plant a lot in a hedge line along a walkway or a planting bed or something, because then you have an abundance to eat without defoliating your whole hedge.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Because you have to be careful about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about, is alyssum an herb?
Alyssum is really just an annual. It really isn't that I'm aware of. Okay. You know, because when I start digging deep in a plant and say, was it ever used in history? Maybe we don't appreciate it for that history. Then I'll call it an herb. And I don't recall that alyssum has anything in its history like that. It's just a great annual.
It just has a pretty scent.
Absolutely.
So when we're talking about herbs, I should have asked this earlier in our conversation. All the herbs we're talking about, when I think herbs, I'm thinking 6 to 8 hours of bright, direct light, right? So if you want to do this herbal landscaping concept, are we talking about full sun right now for the most part?
Yeah, pretty much. Most of them, you know, most of these highly aromatic ones that we're familiar with, sage and thyme and those, they are really full sun plants. They're from Mediterranean regions where the sun is, you know. So sometimes I'll tell people, if you feel like, oh, but I don't have enough sun, maybe there's a high quality of light, maybe in the morning, lots of full sun for at least 4 hours. That might be just enough. Because there's, you know, you can sometimes sneak some plants in the shade, like sweet woodruff is one, chamomile is another one, mints, but those aren't really kind of highly sought after for landscaping. So I would say you do need as much beautiful quality of hot sun as possible. And maybe you have a balcony and there's, you know, reflective light off the building or heat or something like that, might just be enough.
How would you use chamomile? Would you use chamomile as almost a ground cover? Would you use it as a, where would you put that in a landscape?
Yeah. So chamomile is, you know, in tradition, like in England, it was used like a lawn. They'd mow it like a lawn. And so it's a great ground cover. And in small gardens, you know, I don't have a chamomile lawn by any means, but I use it between stepping stones. So it's a nice little tuck in between stepping stones. And then you walk on it. It smells like green apples. It's very,
It's the best. It's one of my favorite herbs to grow.
Yeah. And I even have, so I have a large container that has a Camellia sinensis, which is our tea plant. They make green tea. Mm-hmm. And the base of it, I don't really want to put on the top soil surface because it's a large pot. So I have chamomile as like a topping in that pot. And then,
it's
of
like
course,
a little tea garden. I love that.
Yeah, because anytime those little daisy-like flowers of chamomile starts to bloom, I'm out there picking, I need tea because it's wonderful when it's fresh. And so it's just, yeah, so it was intended to feel like a tea garden, but it's a ground cover. It covers ground.
Yeah. Chamomile is like one of the perfect plants in my opinion, because it's medicinal, it's herbal. You can eat it, you can drink it. The flowers are little joy bombs, like those little yellow and white flowers. Yeah. They attract the bees, like they're so pollinator friendly and they smell so good.
Yeah.
For some reason, I had like a bumper crop of chamomile a couple of years ago and I dried it all. And my husband has gotten addicted to making tea with the dried flowers. And he just finished all the dried chamomile flowers. And he was like, can you grow some more?
We need more.
Because he feels like also when you brew it from the dried harvested flowers, it's just like so different than a tea bag 100%. Version of chamomile. But it's just, so it's like one of the best scents too. I feel like it's a very underrated garden plant.
It is. And I think because people aren't sure how to grow it, because it is, you know, it's a ground cover and it's not like it's going to be this big showy wow moment. Right. And so, you know, being able to just, you know, just find a spot that you can grow it. Because like you said, magic little flowers. I love that you call them joy bombs. That's a great term for it. Because
there's so many of them. Yeah. They're little and there's like a billion of them.
Yeah, they're just a little field of daisies. And, you know, to pick it fresh, there's nothing like a fresh cup of chamomile tea, for sure.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It smells so good.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking deer resistance. So you said, you know, those highly scented sage, rosemary. What about like onions, like more chives, more like garlic? Is garlic, well, garlic's not really an herb, is it? It's kind of a...
You know what? It's a healing plant. I mean, it,
right.
Garlic is a great antibiotic kind of healer. And so, yeah, it can be considered the allium family. That's what you're talking about. And that's going to be chives. And chives are super deer resistant. And, and man, you know what? Chives are really, when they're in bloom, they're a pollinator magnet. You know, they bees just hang on there all night long, like they're going to party on the chives kind of moment. So it has a lot of really great, and I think everybody should have chives. They're so easy to grow. And then, like you said, run out the door, clip them, throw them on scrambled eggs, you know, top some potatoes or veggies in the oven, you know, throw them on. It's just a nice little mix that's not quite oniony, but not quite garlicky. So it's just about right for seasoning.
It's so good. And that I went through a phase where I used to thrift like these fancy glass bottles and I would put vinegar in them. And then I would put the chive blossoms in the vinegar and it would turn the vinegar pink. And then I would gift it to everybody I knew. I was like, here, have some like homemade chive blossom vinegar, you know, like, so, and it was literally like the easiest, cheapest gift ever, but it looked so fancy.
Exactly. I mean, and that's, again, you know, I said kind of from the beginning, what makes this easy to really grow, create, whatever, all of those, that's what I'm looking for. And chives are really they just don't need attention. Just grow them. They're happy.
They're sturdy. They're just the sturdy little workers of the garden.
Yeah.
What about pollinator friendly landscape herbs?
Yeah.
Because I know everybody wants more pollinators in their gardens. And when you just said you had me at hummingbirds dive bombing. So tell me more about how we can use herbs as landscape plants to attract more pollinators.
Yeah. You know, if you were to do a search on pollinator attracting plants, you're going to find herbs kind of at the top of the list. I mean, there's so many of them. And like, you know, going back to some we've talked about, of course, lavender, rosemary, but you know, some real great early nectar kind of producing plant is the annual calendula, pot marigold, super healing plant, but they bloom early. And so, and they're kind of loaded with nectar. So that's a nice one to kind of bookend before like the lavender starts to bloom. And I use those again. I use those for color in pots. I use them, make a little hedge of calendula along, you know, a walkway or along a cut flower garden or something like that. And then some of the, you know, the plants they call the umbel flowers, they have that kind of flat top, like yarrow is one and fennel. Those are really great support for butterfly larvae.
Would dill be one? Dill has that umbelly flower.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. And those, you know, really support the caterpillars. So looking at, and sometimes you just need to give it to them. So, you know, even though they're eating them, that's fine. It's fine. We want that too. And you know, I have in mine, it's blooming now because we've had a mild year, but I have borage, that beautiful kind of blue flower. Yeah, the bees love it. Absolutely love it. And you can pick the flowers. They taste like cucumber. And that's an annual, but it'll seed like crazy. And so if you let it, which I like it, it's not an obnoxious seeder. So calendula and borage, those are these two early bookends to bring in pollinators early. And then once you start getting the meat of the season, catmint and again, lavender, rosemary, gosh, it just seems like there's a lot. The sage, when the sage goes into flower, beautiful pollinator. And it's got that kind of open-lipped flower, so the hummingbirds go mad for it as well. And then there's some herbs that they literally kind of tell you, like bee balm tells you it's going to be a bee balm. The bees love it. And then there's a plant called hummingbird mint, which is an agastache, and that's another huge attractor. So you can just, I mean, it's a long list. And even just adding, you know, if you were to say, I don't have a lot of room, put in a lavender hedge, you become a pollinator magnet right in the middle of summer.
Let's talk about lavender because I've killed so much lavender. Like, I know you live in the Pacific Northwest, which is like lavender country. Like, it's where all the commercial lavender growers grow. Yeah. Can you give us a couple tips for growing lavender if you've maybe not had success with it?
Yeah, I would say that's a number one question I get asked a lot is why is my lavender doing so bad? So the way I look at lavender, first of all, it needs full sun. You can't really cheat that out. And, you know, I was lucky enough to take a trip to the lavender fields in Provence and see lavender in the wild and look at how it grows. And it grows in rocky, nasty soil, right? And so if you kind of are too kind to it, put too much amendment, that kind of thing, it's actually going to fuss. It'll turn brown. It'll, you know, start to fail. It basically turns brown and then goes up until it's gone. And so well-draining soil, absolutely. Even a little rocky. And if you live in an area where you have a lot of rainfall or humid or something like that, is go ahead and mulch around the base of it with like a rock, a gravel or a white rock. That'll help that moisture trap not be such a problem for the plant. And and then I don't water. Once it's established, which is like a year or so, I don't water it. I just let it go. It hates water. It hates nice soil. It's almost like we want to be gardeners. We want to take good care of our plants and we water them and we put good soil. Well, lavender's like, no, thanks. I'm good without it and it'll grow fine. Mm-hmm. So just kind of knowing how it grows in its natural world, which is very rocky, poor soil, good drainage, hot sun. If you can mimic those conditions, then you've found lavender's home.
Yeah, I moved from zone 5B to 10B last year, and I am just making mistakes left and right because I'm so nervous about the Florida heat that I'm like, oh my God, I have to compensate. So I'm understanding now what I did. I planted a big, you know, Crescent Garden?
Yeah. Yeah.
They have like a big raised bed called The Nest. I planted a huge nest filled with pollinators, but it's a self-watering planter. So I put lavender in it, but it's probably because it was self-watering. It was in really evenly moist soil. Yeah. So I probably overwatered it.
Probably. Yeah. Especially I have one of those Crescent self-watering pots and they're great for, you know, that watering, but not for something. Rosemary's, lavender, sages, man, they just like well-draining soil. And, you know, sometimes
put them in the ground because my ground is all sand. So exactly. There we go.
I love it. Right. Yeah, I love it. Well-draining, poor soil. I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive to how we want to be as a gardener. We nurture everything and we should, but lavender's like, nah, I'll be fine over here. Yeah.
Lavender's like the black cat that's like, ugh, leave me alone. Don't stop trying to pet me.
Right. I'll still look beautiful. Don't worry about it.
Do you have suggestions of like pairings of, you know, the thriller, filler, spiller of a landscape, you know, for herbs if people wanted to, you know, experiment with this concept and maybe find a full sun area of their landscape this year to do like a little test garden? Like, do you have a couple of pairings you could suggest?
Let me think about that. You know, I always look at plants when you put pairings together, it's like you don't want aggressive plants. So I'm just going to just like really kind of, you know, put something on a bad list, just mint, because it'll spread all over the place. Right. So you don't pair it with anybody. You give it its own pot and let it just have its way, because we have
grow
to
grow that in a container. Don't put that in the ground. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, let it, because it'll take over and then it's run over what you paired it with. And so looking for plants that love sun, like if you were to say lavender, you know, poor soil, poor drainage, or actually good drainage, poor soil, then you're looking at other plants that appreciate the same type of thing. So sages, rosemaries, lavenders, right? So those are really good kind of mid-range plants. And then when you talk about things that are okay with a little more water, then we talk about thyme, which needs well draining, but it'll take more water. And so kind of thinking along the lines of the layers, if you were to put in a large shrub like an elderberry, and then you kind of hop down to the next layer, which would be something like a lavender or a beautiful sage. There's different sages, different ones that you can try. And then, you know, right onto the ground, tuck down in some chamomile or tuck in a creeping thyme, a creeping rosemary, kind of whatever your climate would be. Because I know we have, you know, probably listeners from all over.
All over the world, not even just the USDA hardiness zone. So
Exactly. And so kind of looking, what does well in your area? What is its needs? Does it need sun or does it need to be watered? And then build from there, because the only thing that really kind of knocks each other out and they don't play well together are those aggressive ones. Oregano can be a little aggressive. Lemon balm is a bit of a wanderer. So, you know, those wanderers need to be in containers. They'll be fine. And then you can mix other things in.
Yeah, no, totally. I was also going to say anchor plants. I think you're number one headline is pick the plants that are going to thrive in your landscape and that you could treat as perennials and you could treat as, you know, landscape plants and not just like your annual little like herb garden that you plant, but also like pick the plants that you want to cook with, right? Like if you love rosemary, then plant rosemary. But if you hate rosemary, maybe look for a different herbal option, you know, because I think that's the other thing with edible gardens is you should be really focusing on the plants that you're going to eat, or you're not going to be harvesting them. You're not going to be paying attention to them. And they're not going to thrive as much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When, you know, people, if I do a class or, you know, whatever, we talk about the book, it's like, well, what herb should I grow? And I'm like, grow what you love. If you don't, exactly what you said, if you don't like the taste, like, for me, if I could have an acre of basil, I'd be happy. I'd love it, right? I can't get enough basil. Some people don't like it as much. Maybe they wouldn't use it. And I feel like if you use it because you want to use it for food, flavor, even to, you know, for a bath salt, whatever you decide to use it for, you interact with it, you know, and most herbs respond when you're using them. You cut them, you use them, they flush out more growth. You know, basil's a really obvious one. The more that you cut it and keep the flowers cut, the more it leaves out and you're going after the leaves. That's what you're eating. So grow what you love. If you have, and if you have limited room, and we all kind of do, we don't usually have acres. We have, you know, sometimes just a balcony. So if it's a balcony and one pot is full of basil and one pot is full of rosemary and one pot has chives in it, done. That's a beautiful chef's garden right there.
Yeah, totally. And then I also want to just immediately contradict myself and say, but also 90% of the stuff choose because you know you like it. But then I will say like one of my most joyful plants of my growing season 3 years ago was growing borage for the first time. I had never heard of the herb. I'd never heard of the plant. And someone suggested it to me and I actually think sent me some seeds. And I ended up growing it. It was my favorite plant I grew the entire summer. I would brew borage tea and then drink it iced all summer long because it's like this iced cucumber drink. Yeah. It was like so hydrating, so delicious. It's also like very medicinal and good for your nervous system, but like whatever, look that up from an herbalism standpoint. The blue flowers were so lovely. Like it was such a joy to learn about a new herb I had never heard of before. So I would also say with every, you know, herbal exploration you do, plant mostly what you know, and then go create, like do something crazy. I think this year, it's not an herb. Is it a fruit? Is it a vegetable? But I'm going to do loofah this year, I think.
Yeah. Is that fruit or vegetable? That's interesting. But
it's a loofah. I don't know. I'm doing a loofah interview later this week.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a vine. We know that.
It's a vine. It's definitely a gourd.
It's a type of gourd. So then we kind of go into...
Maybe it's a gourd. Maybe it's a gourd. That's it is. But like there's always... You should always grow something fun. You know, something new to add to the repertoire. Even if it's like an epic fail and you hate it, like just try it once, you know?
Yeah. Some of my best experiments were failures. I mean, it's like, cause then I go, oh, no, I wouldn't ever, you know, like I pick on sage a lot. I love it in my garden as a landscape plant, a hedge, you know, pollinators, deer hate it. It's one of my protectors for some roses, but I rarely cook with it. It's just not my favorite. So if I had to choose because I was limited on space, I probably wouldn't have it. But, you know, like you said, I think the best part of what you said is like, try something new, try an experiment, especially if it's like a borage is an annual, calendula, you know, different types of basils. There's lots of the Thai basils, the regular basils or Italian basils, I would call them. And so try to experiment. As long as it's not something that takes over the garden and you regret putting it there, then why not?
A funny thing about basil, too, that I didn't realize people grow it as a cut flower.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know that people grow basil for culinary reasons, but my friend Lisa, who's like a huge cut flower farmer, sent me some basil seeds that she grows specifically for cut flowers, and the blooms are gorgeous. I feel like my whole life I've been growing basil for years and years and years, and I'm like, don't let it go to bloom, like pinch it before you can let it bloom, because you want it to keep growing more leaves. But I was like, oh my God, this is glorious in a cut flower bouquet. Also, that's kind of fun, is like learning, even I've been growing basil for 8 years, but this was the first year I grew it for its flowers, which was really interesting. So
there's always something, like you said, there. What I was going to say is, I know that because cut flowers are amazing and there's a lot of people doing it, they've really come with some basil varieties. There's one called Cardinal that have that exceptional bloom on them. And so, I mean, that brings up a point. It's like, what are you growing it for? You know, the purple basils, there's one called amethyst, purple opal. I love that rich kind of, what do we call it? Burgundy, mahogany, whatever.
Yeah.
And I call those the coleus of the herb world. Put those in pots. There's this gorgeous pop of color in there. And then there's some variegated leaves. So, you know, and then I don't really use
the
coleus.
That's the coleus of the earth. That's exactly what these purple basils are. Yeah.
Yeah. They just pop that color in a container. And so I don't usually use those for food. I have basil somewhere else that I can cut. That's my color moment. You know, there's one called Magic Mountain that has kind of hues of blue and purple in it. Uh-huh. So, you know, extending your kind of vision as far as, is this, it's culinary, that's great, but wow, it's beautiful. Can I make a hedge? Can I put it in a container? Can I use it as a cut flower? Here's that adventure we talked about from the very beginning. I mean, it's all they're so purposeful and generous. I mean, I'd love when people would write to me and tell me, oh, I used chives in my latest flower arrangement, or, you know, the flowers of oregano dry beautifully as a dried flower. You know, there's just so many ways you could go with this that there's our adventure.
I love it. I have one more question for you, because you mentioned it and it's planted in my head, and I want to ask in case anyone else was curious. You mentioned bath salts.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite herbs to grow for bath salts? And also, is it as simple as growing them, drying them, and then just like mixing them with Epsom salts for your bath?
Pretty much. I mean, it is very simple. Okay. So, you know, what you're doing is you're growing, drying, and then either baking soda or sea salt or Epsom salt. And it's just a ratio. So really what you're doing with those things is, like, the sea salt softens the water. The Epsom salt softens the water, kind of opens your skin to take the wonderful healing qualities of the herbs. So that's, so you need to get it to that point. And I think some of my favorites, I grow old fashioned rugosa roses. I'm not a rose, but I have to have my roses. They're herbal roses. The ones that are highly fragrant, lots of petals. So I do lots of that in bath salts. Lavender's, you know, a super healer when it goes into a bath and water. Chamomile, even lemon verbena, which is a tender herb for most areas. It is for me too. It's a cleansing herb. And so it kind of helps to clear oils and everything off the skin, and it's super fragrant, smells like lemons. So, you know, kind of looking into the attributes. But the reason roses, I mean, you see it in lotion and everything, is it's a humectant. So that means it holds moisture. And so it softens your skin. And that's kind of what we're looking for out of a bath. We don't want to come out all, you know, messed up. But
yeah.
So
that could be a great gift too. Like my chive blossom oil, that could be an epic and very easy, very affordable. You thrift some cute mason jars or glass jars, put your herbs together. Is there a ratio that you use for the dried herbs to salt?
Oh, you know, I'd have to find it. It's usually about, I would say, like if you had a cup of Epsom salt, it's about another half of that would be a dried herb. And it really kind of depends. So let's, so it's a half to one. And so, but you know, sometimes like lavender buds are a little smaller. And so maybe you add a little bit more. There really isn't, you know, a danger level you would get to. Like if it was a 50-50 mix, it'd probably be amazing. But you want a little bit more of that sea salt or Epsom salt, or whatever you're going to use, because it needs to do its work in the water. And, you know, kind of help baking soda added helps to get the pH more neutral. And when the pH is neutral in the water, your skin will be more apt to take in the healing qualities of the herbs. Mm-hmm. So it's, but yeah, what a great gift. I love the idea. And, you know, tie a cute little ribbon, put a tag on it, said, it's your time to relax from my garden here to you kind of thing.
Your bath from my garden to bath. Forget garden to table, garden to bath.
Garden to bath.
I love that.
Garden
love
to nurture. Yeah, I love it.
I love that idea. That's beautiful. Well, you have a great book on herbal growing and gardening if people are curious, and you have a wide array of resources. So where can everyone find you? And we'll make sure to put all the links in the show notes.
So easy to find me. It's my name, suegetz.com. And I kind of learn about the crazy things I'm experimenting with. And I have a blog, Herb Lover's Garden, and I put some recipes on there I've tried, or why I would or wouldn't. And then my latest book is The Complete Container Herb Gardening. Of course, I have a little peek of it here. Mm-hmm. You can buy that on my website. And it was really for people who don't have a lot of space. They deserve to have an herb on a balcony or on a patio, or maybe they've run out of space because they've over-gardened, which is great. I love that. But it was, and the themes in the container book are really like, do you need a hummingbird garden? So put it in a container. Put it near the feeder, because maybe you can't plant more natural, you know, plants that the hummingbirds would appreciate. It has things like that. So it isn't all just culinary. It's healing gardens. It's, you know, flavor depends on the flavor. And then also even housekeeping herbs like rosemary and thyme. They're super wonderful housekeeping herbs. Mix them with a little baking soda and use it like a soft scrub on your sink or your countertop or something like that. So that's the adventure.
So you have different containers that have different themes. So like the housekeeping herb container, the hummingbird container. Oh, I love that. The tea container also. Such a cool idea.
Yeah, with the tea containers in the book. So you'd see the tea plant with the chamomile under it.
Love it. So cool. Okay. Well, we'll make sure to link to the book and link to all of your links. But thank you so much. Yeah. You definitely have me thinking, number one, I have to go make some more hummingbird nectar because you just reminded me my hummingbird feeders are dry. Dry as a bone. But this was so fun. And I just bought a house. So I'm really thinking about landscape for the first time. And I love this idea of like a rosemary hedge to walk into my house with. Because think about that scent as well. Like that would be
Give whoever your visitor is gets a dose of aromatherapy before they even get to the door. I love
that. Like they're immediately calm when they walk in, which would be great. Right. That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sue. This was so awesome.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me. This was fun talking. Love, love, love sharing about herbs.
All right, plant friends, learn more about Sue and her books and her website in the show notes. She's so awesome. I want a hedge of rosemary in my front yard more than anything. I've promised myself that I won't do landscaping in Florida until the fall because it's too hot here. And also I'm having a baby, but I have been dreaming of a hedge of rosemary in my Floridian garden. So we will see if that happens. I love that this conversation really makes you think bigger about herbs. You don't just need to tuck them into a pot. They can shape your entire garden experience. So like Sue said, start with the herbs that you love, maybe experiment with something new, and let your space become as beautiful and abundant as it is useful. Please let me know if you use any of these ideas in your garden and landscape this year. Tag me on Instagram, send me an email. I want to hear about it. And of course, I would love for you this week to continue to keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance.
If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.